5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Power of Music Thinking. My name is Christoph Zirn, and this is the podcast for people with a musical heart and a wicked job. We're looking for stories, insights, and tools from the big world of music to inspire leaders and followers to listen, tune, play, and perform in whatever field you're operating. Welcome. Today we are in outer space. Well, in some way this is true, because today we speak with Dr. Mariana Wagner, an astrophysicist, songwriter, podcaster, and composer of immersive live shows about sound and space. We learn about her journey that led her from studying oceanography, working as a songwriter for German Schlager stars, and becoming a doctor of astrophysics. And Mariana brought some sound files to the show. We hear a conversation between Saturn and one of its moons, an excerpt from the sound files on the famous golden record that has accompanied the Voyager since 1977, and the grooving sound of moving plasma from the sun. Okay, let's hear more about this. Welcome, Mariana. Welcome to The Power of Music Thinking.
Yeah, I'm glad that I can be here.
Nice, thank you. So we had some technical trouble in the beginning, but that's we solved everything. And if the listener can hear us now, so then it worked. So that's very nice.
It's not a problem, it was a challenge.
Absolutely. And it went better if a challenge, if we can solve it. Otherwise, it's a problem. Okay. So I always start every episode with the same question. And here it goes. What was your first sonic experience or album or live performance that had an impact on you?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think the most fascinating to me, as I remember now, was the sound while swimming with my ears underwater and listening to all the sounds of the oceans. And also we sailed a lot and we slept in the boat, and then you can also hear all the little, marine life action on the wall of the ship. And I think that was very impressive to me. Yes.
Wow. That sounds good. And swimming was in the sea or?
Yeah, in the ocean.
In the ocean.
Oh. Yeah. We were sailing a lot in Greece. And there you have wonderful water. It's very clear. And you have also wonderful sounds.
Yeah.
That you can hear very clearly. And while diving, I mean, like, not diving, just swimming with ears underwater or snorkeling or just lying in the boat and listening to the noises in the night when everything is calm and the waves have calmed down. That was really impressive to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally diving into another world, another sound world. And it, if I recall it right, sound travels in air, I think 344 meters per second, and underwater it's, I think, 2,500, if I'm right. So that's also you hear actually underwater wider than above water.
Yeah, water, of course, every wave, sound wave propagation needs particles that bounce against each other, and you have more of those in the water. And you also have a sound channel in the water, which is at a certain depth. And also when, for example, it's a very important thing for the strategic diving of submarines, for example. They go in the sound channel, listen, and then they can also leave the sound channel to not be heard anymore. Also, when a plane drops the black box. Mm-hmm. It there's a a noise that goes off in the sound channel, so you can hear it not all around the world, but very, very far.
Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah, it's because the water has different densities. Saline, the concentration of salt is different, also temperature. So you have a real jump in temperature and salinity, and then you have another sound propagation.
Wow, fantastic. You know, what just pops to my mind is in one of the episodes before, Mike told that a very nice story about a musical piece, a Chopin a piano concert. Oh. That he liked and he went home to his mother and said, "Wow, today I heard the most beautiful sound in the world." And then his mother said, "Oh, that's not a coincidence, because I was hearing a lot of that piano concerto when I was pregnant with you."
Ah.
I've heard it talking about water and everything. So nice. Yeah. Nice link between the episodes.
Yes.
You already mentioned some, let's say, scientific explanations. So that's let's segue in. Who are you? What do you do for a living? So explain a little bit about yourself, and then the listener will understand what's your special connection between music and what else you do.
Yes, I always loved music and wanted to do music professionally, but I was never the person to study classical music or to, I wasn't eager to play in an orchestra or something. But I had like two hearts pounding in my chest, one for music and one for science. But I did not like physics, because in school, physics was really boring. And I have to say, we just did electronics, and I wasn't too fond of that. When I could give the, when I could skip the physics in school, I did it. But then I wanted to study biology, to do something with the ocean, like to become maybe videographer with a scientific background in biology, because I was also a surfer and I love the ocean, as I said before. So I ended up studying oceanography.
Oh.
Because the letter did not arrive in time to study biology. And that was a little bit of luck, because when I started to study oceanography, this is the physics of the oceans. And that was so fascinating to see those charts of currents and the interaction between ocean circulation and atmospheric circulation, that I was hooked. And suddenly I understood physics better, because it was another way of teaching, the aesthetics of the pictures, and also the fascination of all those systems interacting with each other that influence our planet. I was hooked, and then I studied oceanography, and that was physics. You had to study physics and math for it, and then I could switch. So I studied physics and also oceanography, and so I climbed up this z-axis from the oceans to exoplanets. Finally, and when I made my doctorate, I studied exoplanets then, and meanwhile I wrote music for other artists.
Wow!
So I could not really decide. Everybody told me you have to choose one of those things, because you will never be able to compete with people who are doing one thing 100%. But I could never ditch one part of my heart, so to speak. So I did both things parallel.
Yeah, that's also, by the way, a very common. We, in one of the episodes, we talk about polymath. So people that have enormous knowledge and skills in one, in more than one field, in two to three fields. So like Leonardo da Vinci, or, you know, all the polymath we know. And on the other hand, let's say an easy word for it, you're a generalist. And in our society, we try to focus or to force experts, but because experts are only working in their silo, then they are right. But if you combine it with others, then there's the problem. So I think we need much more generalists to see all the connections between one field and the other. Hang on. Out of the water, into the air, and then exoplanets. Can you explain to someone who skipped most of the physics in school, and maybe also to the listener, what is this exoplanets?
Well, we have planets in our solar system. We live on the third planet, the Earth, but there are many, many, like, uncountable other systems, stars that have planets. And those are called exoplanets because they are not in our solar system.
Wow.
And of course, it's always a little bit driven by the search for the second Earth, of course. We are searching for biomarkers, maybe, or hints that this planet could bear life. But we are still at the beginning of this journey.
Wow.
Because, yeah, the instruments are getting better and better, and we know of a lot of it. When I wrote my thesis, my doctoral thesis, we knew of like 500 of them, and now it's thousands of them that we know of.
Wow, that's amazing how much we know. Or is it already knowledge, or is it information? I'm just wondering.
It's an estimate, you know. They are so far away and they are so small, so you can make certain estimations about the habitability. For example, how close or far away is the planet from its host star? Which type is the host star? Is it like a hostile star, or is it like a star like our sun, which is a very, very normal and very unspectacular star, actually, which is good for us because otherwise life couldn't have developed. And then you need certain other criteria that a planet has to meet, so you can say maybe it has tectonics, maybe it has an atmosphere, maybe. But it's still a lot in the maybe.
Well, I have a question about this, because when we talk about interplanetary or exoplanets, you know, and excuse when I use the words wrongly, we hear of radio telescopes, right? So, and then I think, okay, what do these people do the whole day? They do just what, by the way, I would like to do, like in the power of music thinking, it's about sound and listening. But do they really listen all day, or is it misconception?
Whatever kind of telescope you have, either radio or telescopes in space or whatever you are looking at, they are recording all the time. And they are also they're also working together. So if the Earth turns around and you have night side, you know, the Earth is spinning all the time. So there is a lot of connection also in between the institutes. So you have continuous inflowing data, and there are not enough scientists to analyze all this data. So you have also public science access, and everybody, like everyone who's interested, can access this data and try to find new things, try to analyze the data. And of course, with the with the rising of AI and the rapid development in this feel there will be more possibilities to analyze those giga and giga and terabytes of data.
AI would be the solution here. Like to everything that we talk about these days, that we say, oh, AI, and then it will work in some day.
Yeah, but still, the AI is, I don't know. I think the human factor is cannot be neglected.
Right.
You know?
Talking about universal principles, like the human factor, for me, it's also a universal principle. You're combining two fields, like exoplanet or astrophysicist, is this the right word? And to be a musician. And from a technical point of view, music is nothing else than waves. How was your journey to combine these two?
You know, there wasn't a journey towards, it was always there, kind of. And it was just a question of how to combine it in one day. But studying physics is different, I guess, from studying law. I think law students, they have to study all the time and they don't have free time ever. That was different during my study time, and I had a lot of vacant time for learning to compose music, also learning to use the gear for it, because now everybody can make music with one computer and one software, like GarageBand, for example, or coming to AI, soon there will be text prompts. But, I started doing it some time ago, and then you had to really understand a little bit your laptop and your software and everything. So, and also how to write a song and what makes a song, you know? It's you always have this formula almost. You have the verse, the chorus, verse, chorus, middle part, or C part, or however you call it, the bridge, and then two choruses, and then you have the four chord song. You know, almost every successful pop song is composed of the same four chords, and you can do like almost infinite types of melodies, and you play it half time or double time or whatever. But there needs to be apart from just the like mathematic formula for a pop song, there needs to be this magic ingredient as well. And that just comes with doing it, with writing 10 songs. And personally, you don't like 9 of them, but maybe the 10th has this magic ingredients, the chorus that you still hear before you go to bed. And when you wake up, you have it in your ear. And maybe other people too. And this makes a song work. So it took a little time because I was quite self-taught. And we didn't have like, oh my God, I sound so old, but there was no YouTube to watch a quick tutorial. You actually had to read the manual.
There's nothing wrong with reading a manual if you really want to dive into something. And on the other hand, we have a lot of user experience designers and service designers and interaction designers that really want to make software and the rest of everything that we use every day as easy as possible so that we don't have to think. On the other hand, that's also a link to craft or to crafting. If everything is too easy, like, so everything is then like, let's say, IKEA cupboard. Everything is there, and there's actually the only challenge is to get the right stuff in the right point. But if you really create something new, then you also struggle. And what you just said, you might have 10 songs and 9 are maybe not good, but you need these 9 to make that one special to as perfect as possible.
Yeah, and then there's the joke that you can edit hi-hats for 10 years and never be satisfied. That's that's quite true.
Yeah, if you're in hi-hats. And then you see, oh, there's much more on the drum set.
Yeah.
Hey, but you bring these two worlds together, and maybe you have to mention where you're working at the moment. And there's also a very special, can we call it show?
I wrote a show to combine the two worlds because I wrote songs for commercial artists. And I wrote a lot in the German Schlager Bereich. It was the only, really the only thing that sold at some time. Pop was dead and it was only Schlager.
Mm-hmm.
And then pop came back and it switched a little bit. Now pop sounds like Schlager and Schlager sounds like pop. You never know. But of course, when you do it professionally, you also have to earn money to pay your rent. So
can you give an example of one of the songs that we might hear on Spotify or somewhere else on the radio?
I wrote something, for example, for Beatrice Egli or for Howard Carpendale.
Oh, wow.
You can find those songs on Spotify or wherever. Yeah. I never wanted to be on stage with like pop music, with just as an artist singing a love song or something like that. And then sometimes...
Why?
Because I liked working in the studio. I did not see myself on stage with songs about my life or who I love, or I thought I love the studio work and the writing, and I thought other people can do it better than me. Also, to be quite frank, my voice is okay. I did a lot of choirs for artists, but it's not like you hear my voice and you think, it's not that recognizable. And you also have to know where your limits are. And my limit is I can sing great choirs for other people to elevate their voices. But that's also the cause for it, is that my voice has a very mild character, I would say, you know? So I knew my place somehow. And then there was the idea to tell the story about space with music. And then I knew, okay, that's my thing.
Wow.
It's about the story. It's about the message. It's not so much about if I'm the best singer in the world or not. And then I wrote this show. I picked some sounds of that are, for example, the sound of a comet or the sound of our sun. Maybe we can listen to the sound of the sun.
Yeah.
Which is it has a really great groove in itself. Yeah.
If you say this is the sound of the sun, if I get out of the room and really try to listen.
There are lots of signals that are light to sound conversions that aren't actually sound waves. But as an astrophysicist, the thing you're looking at is this light. It's always the light. That's the only thing you can really measure from afar.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if you send an instrument there and record something, then you have a real sound maybe. There's also another example later, which I can show you.
Yeah, cool.
But the sun is a body that moves inside in its core. It's 15 million degrees hot. And the plasma emerges to the surface, it cools down, and it falls back to the core. And this is a convection motion. You also know if you're cooking water in a pot or from our atmosphere, everything that is heated like emerges, cools down, and falls back again. So some parts of the sun are moving towards us and some are moving away.
Ah.
And this creates a really acoustic wave inside the body of the sun. and it travels through the sun's body in about 2 hours and travels back again. And it's called astroseismology.
Oh.
So you can listen inside the star better than you can see inside the star.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you have to just play it like 40,000 times faster, and then you hear this groove. But it's basically like a guitar, like a humming, or like the acoustic waves inside the body of a guitar.
Yeah, I can start it again. Dong, 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 dong.
Ding, da, ding, da, ding, da, ding, da, ding, da, ding. Yeah, and I took that as a bass line. Yeah, and I took that as a bass, and then I wrote a song on top of it.
Wow.
Which I sing live, and during the time I sing, the people who are watching the show, they travel to the sun in this full dome environment. I was able to make an audio mix with Tom Ammermann, and he's like the immersive sound god. For me, at least. No, he actually was nominated for a Grammy. And he did Kraftwerk, the immersive mix. And he's very good. And he taught me the way of immersive audio mixing. He showed me. I'm not an expert, but...
Wow.
And he also helped with the show. And... then you have the visuals in full dome, which were supplied by the Planetarium Hamburg.
Yeah.
And there, the show is...
That's the place where you are now.
Yes. I'm responsible for communications. So our goal is that we open a little bit the eyes and the mind. Basically, the further you look out into space... the more you can see how special our planet is. And so our message is always in the end, look at what you have here. This planet is fascinating. It's maybe statistically not unique in the universe, but we will never be able to go to planet B. So we just have this planet. We have to take care of our planet. And this is one of the core messages of the show, but also of the planetarium, or more or less of every planetarium.
Yes, that's a great, let's say, advertising to go to the planetarium that's in close to you.
Yeah.
And go there and also listen there. There's also this, the story of, if I remember right, I don't know if it was Apollo 9 or 11, when the three astronauts went into space, the first time they looked back on the Earth and then realized, wow, actually what you just said, from wow, this is so special. And this means sometimes when we want to really understand what we are, what we do in our daily life, it helps us to take these steps back. So we don't have to fly to the moon to do this, but look at from a distance and see what you have. What's the context? What's the situation you are in? And then try to make a little bit meaning out of it with all these influences. And I think that's a great advertisement for Planetarium Hamburg special, because there you bring all your arts and your knowledge together with your knowledge of astrophysics and exoplanets and everything, but also with your music, because music touches you maybe we can play a few more sounds. And there's a special thing that if you dive into music, there are different musicians that are related to outer space. So in my case, I know a lot about Stockhausen, and he had a record he called Sirius. And at a certain moment, he thought, or he he thought he would be, or he felt, let's say, he resonated very much with it. And I don't know if you know Sun Ra, that's the free jazz Afro-futurist. And he was very much, he told people not that he's born, but he came from Saturn. And I see on your list, there's the sound of Saturn. Maybe we can have a listen to it.
Yeah, sure. This sound is a very special sound. This is called the Eerie Song of Saturn. And it is basically the planet having a conversation with one of its moons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. There is an icy moon, which is called Enceladus. And it has volcanoes. It has volcanoes, and they are not, they eject ice particles because underneath the snowy surface of that moon, there is a hot ocean, hot, salty ocean, maybe bearing life, we don't know, could be bacterial life, like at the black smokers at the bottom of our ocean. There's also a lot of life around them that could be as well on this moon. But it's within the magnetic field of Saturn, and they are exchanging waves. And we sent a spacecraft there, Cassini, and it recorded this conversation just weeks before it was destroyed in the atmosphere of Saturn.
Oh, that's where it came from. And by the way, Cassini, you know, the Voyager mission, and there's a special story about it.
Yeah, the Voyager, they were launched in 77, both, and they are the man-made objects that are the farthest away in space. They left not only the solar system, but the heliosphere. This is the whole space which is still influenced by the solar wind. And they have golden records on board. And this is not like a record you can put, in your record player, but it's a data record with a very, very absurd instruction of how aliens have to play it if they find it. And I can tell you it's really hard to understand how, and it's also they have also our position in relation to some pulsars, so the aliens can find us. And on this record you have greetings of the people of Earth, and also classical music and everything that was chosen in the 70s to represent Earth. And we also have a recording, and this is the son of Carl Sagan, and Carl Sagan is the astronomer.
Hello from the children of planet Earth. Hello from the children of planet Earth.
He was the one also after the whole collection of the sounds. And by the way, there's a funny story about it, because it was 77, it was in the middle of the Cold War, and we have to understand the Americans were producing this golden record with Beethoven Fifth, Brandenburgisch Konzert, Bach, and also rock and roll and everything. And then someone had the idea, okay, we have to also maybe to include also the Russians in there. And then they picked one song, and it's sung by the Rustavi choir, but it's not a Russian song, because in that time it was the Soviet Union, so they picked the Georgian song. So there's no Russian song in on that record. So if aliens will find the record and understand the instruction. And I will put this link into the show notes because it's too nice to understand. We came from your, let's say, the sounds underwater. So that picture from you, your first sonic experiences via your musical skills to the, to let's say, outer space. So that's a whole story. And you just bring it together in the planetarium in Hamburg. So where people can go there and get that show, but the sound, you were the composer of that sound, or are you also, is there some live playing involved?
My songs, I'm the composer of the songs that use the space sounds, but the space sounds are of course accessible to everybody in the internet to use for free because they are recorded by NASA, for example. Yeah. But the plan is to make a tour with the show as well. It's already been played in different planetariums, but to tour a little bit further as well.
Very yeah. Nice. And if you go to the website of the planetarium, you can book the show. So there are different shows that you can see and experience. So I think we covered quite a lot from music and physics. Is there anything that we forgot or that you would like to mention?
Don't confuse music and music industry, and just even if you just write music for your hard drive to listen to it 1 year later, it's always worth it. It's always worth it. You don't have to sell your music. Anyways, you cannot earn a lot of money anymore with it in the current state of the music industry. But just do what makes you happy. And think out of the box. Include new sounds. Invent something new and don't always use the same formula. Which we were talking about before. Create something new.
Thank you. Creative tips and direction from you. So thank you very much for being on the show. And I wish you good luck with everything.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate this because listening is one of the top leadership skills. And I feel honored about this. It is my mission to find, create, and share inspirations for meaningful collaboration based on music analogies. If you want to support this, please subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating, or write a review on iTunes or Spotify. And more inspirations can be found on musicthinking.com. We have a blog, and you can download the Music Thinking Framework. And finally, I would love to hear your feedback. And if you need help with a business challenge, please reach out to me via email podcast@musicthinking.com.